It is October 6th, 2021. Today we discuss Microsoft Forms, some alternatives, and maybe a few other things. I am Michael Askins, architect and technologist, and this is the Technology Architecture Solution Engineering Show. And in the studio with me, I have...
Dev.
Dev, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a crazy few days. I'm pushing real hard on the gas pedal. I got some stuff coming up next week that I need to try to get a bunch of things out of the way for that. So that'll be interesting finishing off the week. So one of the things that had me thinking about that is I had to create some ways of collecting some data this past week or so. And it got me to thinking and looking at some of our customers and our user base, seeing what the adoption level has been for Microsoft Forms or potentially things that are, used by Forms, alternatives like, insert pulling solution here. There's like 1,000 of them out there. You can find, pulling and surveying as a service everywhere. But there is an advantage using a service and solution like Forms, and we're going to hope to touch on some of that today. So at a high level, I'm going to toss it over to you here, and I'm going to throw up the whiteboard, and we're going to kind of jot down here some of the things for our users on, what Microsoft Forms is, what it is, what it is not, from a use case perspective. So let's dive into this with our vast knowledge of M365.
Yeah. So Microsoft Forms is a service that I don't know when it was added to the M365 stack. It's definitely one of the later ones that was added, I believe. It's essentially, it's a ready-made baked-in service that comes with most M365 licensing options that enables you to send out surveys, polls, quizzes, if you're in the ed realm, to your employees or students. Similar competing products is like SurveyMonkey, insert survey service that you could pay for. It's free. The benefit is, as is with most of the Microsoft platform, I'd say it's tightly integrated into the rest of the Microsoft platform. It's part of your licensing. You already probably have it inside your tenant. And, you can easily control probably permissions probably a little bit better to, who can do what and stuff like that with the forms and stuff like that. I think it's definitely more, it's a lot beneficial, especially from an ed perspective. You can do quizzes with it, it's definitely a huge thing inside the classroom if people are leveraging that.
Yeah, for sure. So let's break down what this is. You had mentioned there's SurveyMonkey. It's a pretty straightforward. You put in a bunch of questions. You put in the ways you want them to answer, either freeform text, radio button, checkbox, drop down. That's very straightforward. It speaks for itself. Our tech community says yawn right now, but our business community might like the way how this is integrated into their world, and we're going to get there. So bear with us for just a few seconds to kind of delineate between these things. So, with surveys, when you have surveys, there's, a reason for them, right? There's, you're looking for answers. You're looking to have a, curated or free form answers. With polls, you're looking to, enumerate, allocate, get all this stuff together and find out what people's, opinions are. Polls and surveys are very similar, but the way you deliver them are slightly different. And quizzes are just that, there's questions and answers, and, one drives another, and you can build out a whole branching scheme for all of these, except with exception of polls, like with standard forms and surveys, you can do branching. So one question will lead you to another batch of questions, if you answer a specific way. So that's standard fare. Everyone knows what that is. So now we got that out of the way. Let's talk through this, right? Let's talk through what the use cases are for these, right? So for our typical viewpoint for surveys is just to aggregate and get answers. For polls, we're looking to get sentiment. For quizzes, we're looking to gauge knowledge. And there's multiple ways in which Microsoft Forms can be deployed. They can be deployed directly through Forms. They can be deployed inside of an Outlook plugin. So you can send an email that looks has a form embedded into it. And you can also put forms and polls into Teams. That's where quizzes are self-contained quizzes. So we're gonna kind of skip over quizzes a little bit today and focus more on surveys and polls. That seems to be where most business goes. If you're EDU, I apologize. We can go deeper if you need it. Just look us up in the show notes. Quizzes are questions and answers, and it aggregates out who did what where. It's really that straightforward. Surveys and polls seem straightforward, but how you use them and the efficiency of them and the limitations of the platform is what we're going to get to today. So did you want to touch on polls and Teams and how that could work?
Yeah, I would add one more to the list of platforms that you could bring up the surveys on. You could embed it in a SharePoint site for people, for orgs out there that are using a SharePoint for their, you know, pushing out info to their org, and they need to do like this site or whatever and stuff like that. You know, you could push out forms and embed them inside the SharePoint page as a web part, which is, it comes out of the box in SharePoint. But you know, when you're looking at surveys versus polls, I mean, I think, you know, surveys are definitely be more robust in the types of questions you're asking and the different, you know, like you said, different branching pieces. You know, if you answer the question this way, you can go this way. You know, polls are definitely more concise and, you know, usually like one question or two questions, depending. You know, if for like, who wants, what are we getting for lunch today? Or whatever.
Well, right there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, you know, and polls are more, I would say, more specific to inside of Teams as well, and Outlook or PowerPoint as well. You can do it in PowerPoint. Yep. You know, they're definitely more concise and they're specialized in a certain way. So you won't see them in SharePoint. They're more for surveys. But if you're looking, you know, if you're in the middle of a meeting in Teams, or like you said, with the Outlook plugin for a poll, if you want to send out via email or even PowerPoint, you know, those are the two of the platforms you're going to see polls in.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing it's worth noting is they make it super easy to deploy polls in Teams. Now, that's not the only choice for surveys and polls out there. We mentioned SurveyMonkey. Inside the Microsoft ecosystem, when you look inside of Teams, there are a bunch of third-party things that you can add to your Teams channels, like Polly. It's the one, yeah, with the bird. It does very similar things. It's a subscription base, though. You have to subscribe to that. So if your enterprise does already subscribe to that, you can integrate into Teams. That's the glory of the Microsoft ecosystem, as opposed to some of the other big tech firms, is they are a little more open to integration than some of their frenemies, if you will. So the one thing I will say also is that when you are adding stuff to a team and a team channel, you need to have the rights to do that, right? So you have to have the ability to do that. Add forms out of the box. Most 365 stuff you can add to your channel or your team. It normally works well, but you know, there are strict governance rules out there, and some organizations don't even turn on some applications, so you might not see it there. So if you don't see it there, it doesn't mean it's not available to you. It might mean that your organization is restricting you. And we'll get to that again here in a little bit. So from a survey perspective, we use it frequently for the day job. We have, you know, pre-engagement questionnaires for certain lines of our business that we, you know, engage with, wanting to get as much information as possible. So, you know, it's useful, and people say, okay, well, how does that work? Well, you can make a form externally available to people too as well. And again, keep in mind your audience. If you just like post out a form link and it's out there in the public and in the wild, and anybody can answer it, you might hit a hard limit, which we're going to get to. There are hard limits with forms and what you can do with them. Just as with any service, there's you know typical limits to what you can do. So you know, thinking back, you had mentioned PowerPoint. You know, without dwelling on PowerPoint, because I think we need to have probably a show just on PowerPoint integrations. A lot of people were surprised by that. How would that use case work inside of PowerPoint for polls? publicly posting the PowerPoint and people would answer it as they go? What do you see the use case there?
You know, I see it, and I think it probably goes a little bit hand in hand with Teams as well. You know, if you're given a presentation or if you're given a presentation and, you know, you're asking for some feedback from the audience, you know, you could certainly, you know, spin up a poll right there and deploy it out and use it for to gather feedback. And, you know, as far as if it was questions or if, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, so I definitely see it like that. If you're trying to gather feedback from your audience when you're presenting the PowerPoint slides, and you know, I think that's probably the main use case. I don't know if you see more places to use it or whatever the case may be. So
in PowerPoint, I've never really thought of using it in that capacity. So, you know, if I'm delivering a PowerPoint, it's generally on Microsoft Teams, and I would put the poll inside of Teams as opposed to in the PowerPoint. So, like I said, there's multiple ways to do things. You know, some organizations are, you know, Slacky, and they do a different way of communicating. So this is a way to enable more of the Office suite in multiple ways. Again, one of the things I wanted to bring up is, you know, the way you can customize that. There are color schemes. You can pizzazz it up, if you will. I forget the phrasing that Microsoft uses, but you can overlay different themes and different colors. You can make it look really rich and robust as opposed to a typical just web form, which is kind of yawn. But in this day and age, technologists actually have to start having design considerations, which is interesting, because some of us just don't have that ability or are not very good at it, maybe. So others are really good at it, and it gets to pull that creative side out of them. So it does create some interesting products, if you will.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, from another, I know we said we wouldn't dive too deep into quizzes, but, you know, if you're a teacher out there that's using, you know, you have the M365 stack as your main tool inside your classroom, you know, if you're using PowerPoint to present on a topic and you're teaching your students, you know, you can embed a form inside, or a quiz in this case, inside the PowerPoint slides and you know, do a quick heat check on if people are paying attention or not. Yeah. With a quick question or a reading check or something like that. So yep. There's definitely that type of use case as well.
Do you happen to know a teacher that does that?
I do not. They use Google. So. Oh,
okay. So sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. So it's our next.
It's our next effort, right? Next effort, yeah. So with all good things, there are limitations, right? So it's also worth stating that Microsoft's enabling capabilities, one of the things that a lot of people don't know is if you have a, you know, personal M365 account or a personal Microsoft account, you can access forms. A lot of people didn't know that. So you can you are severely restricted on how many you can have and how many replies you can have. But you can enable that. So like if you're running a sports team and you have a Microsoft account, just a regular, you know, I signed up for one, or I have a Hotmail or what have you. You can actually send out for forms and have that handled. So I thought that was definitely interesting. And I don't think it's done as a gateway, because I don't see forms being a flagship of the M365 fleet. But I see it being a heavy lifter when it comes to handling certain tasks that organizations need to have, be it a nonprofit, be it a sports mm-hmm. organization, EDU, or a business. So, you know, some of the ways in which I see them being used is part of workflows, people requesting access to certain resources in a business. Sometimes you see forms being made for equipment requests, or say being time off. I actually saw a peer of mine, actually they use forms as their time off for their team, and they use Power Automate on the back end once it's approved to actually insert it into their HRIS system, which I thought was very unique, because I would think that the HRIS system had an interface for that, but apparently it didn't, and they were creative with it. So there's a lot of things you can do with it. Now now once you collect this data, so you create, you get your questions, you put your UI UX hat on and you say, this is the order in which it should go. And if there's branching, you handle all of that. You put all your options in on how you want it to be done. And now all the data starts coming in. Like, what do you do? How do you get it? What do you do with it? So there's two main ways you can get that data. The first one is the forms in your M365 portal or O365. There is a results tab or a results section where you can look in it, and it really creates some really nice, robust things that you can actually probably take a screen scrape if you needed to. And you can get some pie charts and, you know, sentiment or, you know, depending on your question type. You'll get that overall look and feel for it. You'll find out how long it's taking, the average time for your form to be completed. And it's nice, but that's not as useful for businesses as getting at the data. So tossing back to you, what is the other way we can get at that data?
You know, we can certainly get it a multitude of different ways. I mean, you can, I think you were talking about Power Automate. You know, I've done a lot with forms in Power Automate, trying to build out a event registration process, for that. So, I mean, you can certainly grab at it with Power Automate. you know, you can grab at it with, and honestly, once you get it into Power Automate, it's a matter of where you want to direct it. Yeah. You know, you could go to a SharePoint list if you really need to record responses and control them in a more granular fashion. We've talked about SQL table before, if you really want to go that route, if there's a use case for that. Honestly, any type of data store.
And if you're on the business side and you're not up for mapping and that out, you can actually smash a button and download an Excel version of it.
Yeah.
And you'll have an Excel version of it and you can manipulate it like just regular Excel data, or you can upload it to OneDrive or import it somewhere. And once it's in that format, you can use a reporting tool like Power BI to make even more rich, robust visualizations and data around the stuff you collected with forms. So, you know, kind of circling back here, you know, crossing the 17-minute barrier, wanting to make sure that we give those limitations out, and then we'll kind of just banter a little bit more on some of the use cases. There are hard stops when it comes to forms, right? So it's if it was unlimited, their servers would blow up with people making a form a day for what do you want for lunch, you know. let's roll through those limitations. So the first limitation is the amount of forms any one subscriber can make. And listen to the careful phrase there, is per subscriber. So if you are licensed and you have a M365 account, you are granted, I'm going to put an approximation asterisk here, you're granted 400 forms that you can make. Now, that seems like a lot, but sometimes it doesn't seem like a lot, depending on what you do and how you do it and how you manage the data and the forms. And then beyond that, there's a limitation on how many questions you can have inside of a form. And there is a maximum of 200 questions inside of a form. The question to that question is, what constitutes a question? So I know you and I, during the pregame, we had this discussion. So I'm going to kind of lob it back to you to talk to that point, because it is very important to understand what your limits are. So, you know, if you have one type of question and you have like 800 of them, it's just not going to work. I mean, it would be really unrealistic to have anybody answer that anyways. Yeah. But so why don't you talk through what is actually considered a question in Microsoft Forms?
Yeah, and I think it used to be not as straightforward, but now it is a little bit more straightforward, with the exception of one question type. But, you know, outside of what they call Likert question types, each overall question, you know, that we've talked about, I forget the name of the question at the moment, the CERT score or something like that.
Net Promoter.
Net Promoter, thank you. That used to count as multiple questions depending on how you format it, but that's overall one question now. You have your multiple choices, one question, long form answer, one question. All the different ones escape me at the moment, but you know, all the questions besides Likert questions are count as one question. Now, for the people out there, we're for Likert questions. Those are the types of questions. If you ever have taken like a personality test or something like that, you know, you have a list of questions like
somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat I agree, somewhat agree, neutral, disagree, very strongly disagree. If you have those questions, if you share your feedback, each statement in that Likert question counts as a question. So if you have a list of five different of those types of questions, is if you're like one of the examples Microsoft gives, if you were satisfied with an event, if you agree, disagree, or you know, whatever the options are, if you have five of those types of statements underneath that question, they all count for a question. So that'll be five questions. So you know that's you know, if you're using those, be careful if you have a very long form. But otherwise, it's pretty straightforward from a one-to-one perspective.
I 100% agree there. So that's the question. Now there's also some other limitations inside of your questions based upon the question type. So if there's an area for someone to put a multi-line text in or free form text, there's a character limit, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. So there's actually a character limit for the question itself and for a response as well. So if we're looking at the response itself, if it's a multi-line answer or if that type of question, we're looking at 4,000 characters, and that does include your spaces and everything like that. It's not just your words. So you know, there is 4,000 for that, and it's also 4,000 for the characters that are allowed inside a question. So
I'm a old school. When I'm typing a sentence, it's like period, space, space.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't do well if you're typing a book.
Absolutely, get those characters back. Just kind of moving beyond that. Any other limitations that you can think of inside of the forms?
I would say that it's similar for quizzes. For total responses, or I think they take a different aggregate of that for total responses inside in the ed realm. It's up to 200,000 characters, which makes sense because, you know, from an ed realm, if you're typing an essay or, you know, something like that or whatever, it kind of makes more sense. The one other one that stands out to me, especially if you're in a larger org and you're sending out a form for everyone to answer, is the number of responses that you can get back. Yeah. And I have one question for you after this, because it's something we hadn't talked about, and I'm actually not clear on it. From a response perspective for a form/quiz, you can have up to 50,000 responses come back to a single form. Yep. So for, you know, that could get a little bit difficult depending upon if your org is 100,000 plus, or, you know, however big the org is and stuff like that. Yeah. And, you know, we'll talk about some other options that might be available to you that's already in your licensing. But the one question I have for you that I wasn't clear on that you mentioned earlier was, I know we talked about there's a total of 400 forms that you can have. Is that per user, or is that for the entire tenant?
That's for the user.
For the user.
But there's also an asterisk there too. So that's 400 forms per user. It's 400 forms and polls per user.
Yeah.
But that also includes the items that you deleted in the recycle bin.
Yes.
So if you delete a form and you're at near the max cap, so like say you have 375 forms, you're like, oh, I got room for 25 more, and you try to create 376 and it says can't do it because you're like, or it'll just zerk out on you and kick an error message. Say you deleted like 25 of them and they're in the recycle bin for a period of time, and that time is generally 30 days. So I mean, if you're pumping out 400 forms, I mean, that's an awful lot, but it's not unheard of for an organization to have, say, a form for requisitioning and a form for like having all these different embedded forms, and they're kind of persistent. Yeah. But it is an awful lot of forms, right? And it's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it is definitely a lot.
And especially if, you know, if you like, we'll take HR, for example, if they're pushing out a lot of surveys and stuff like that. And if that falls to one user, then, you know, they might approach that limit very quickly if it's a very large org. Absolutely. And something to clarify what you had mentioned earlier about the polls versus forums is that before, I think it was before the beginning of this year, that polls used to count towards the 400 forum limit. But
polls and teams.
Yeah. Including teams, yeah, polls and teams and stuff like that. At the beginning of this year, I think they looked at the data and was like, well, this is not very good. You have a separate allotment now of 400 polls in addition to the 400 forums.
So I mean, if you think of it, how many working days there are, if you do a pull a day for lunch.
Yeah, you hit that limit very quickly. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind as well. Now you have a separate allotment of for polls. So
yeah, and as we see more adoption of forums, and I think that's what's spurring this on. People will be like, "Huh, you're having a show on the forum?" Well, there's a lot of movement in our world right now using it, and you know, customers are sending us, you know, like, "Hey, we have a pre-engagement questionnaire." They're having an onboarding as a, you know, a consultant questionnaire coming out, and it came across in forums. I was like, hey, go you. You know, it's like, awesome, leverage that spend. You don't have to subscribe to SurveyMonkey or be capped to 10 questions. You can actually like be robust and brand it the way your company looks, and it's real pro, right?
Yeah.
So you had touched on something that is, you know, the outlier of 50,000. So say you do have something that is, you know, super robust, and you have this need for lots of data. Maybe the data types isn't quite matching what forms is, and there's some things that you want to do that go beyond its capabilities. And you had mentioned there's products inside of 365, and one of those is Power Apps. Because the beauty of a Power App is the back end can be anything, right? Anything that's data driven. It could be SharePoint, it could be a SQL table. It could be a SharePoint list. It could be a SQL table. It could be anything. Right? You can vector it anywhere. I think the possibilities are deep there. And, you know, reach out to your friendly neighborhood, us, if you have a question on where to put that kind of a, you know, if you're struggling with what to do where. It's worth noting that there are other options inside of the system that you're already paying for. So you don't have to go subscribe out to another service. Microsoft's got you covered anyway, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially for those more robust types of surveys or something that may not fit into a form exactly. Or if you have a bunch of different responses that exceed the 50,000, you know, Power Apps does give you that level of granularity where you could, you know, do a lot more with it if the forms doesn't fit your use case.
Absolutely. And this is the part in the show, you know, with a few minutes left that our listeners are going to not like, but our viewers with their eyeballs are going to like, is I'm going to do a screen share again here. And I'm just going to kind of pop up here, my screen, and just to kind of, if you've not seen forms, just to give you that touch point, you know, maybe we should have done this at the top of the show, but you know, you have a bunch of theming options here. You can add your own theming option. When you're done, or when you're in your middle of building out your form, you can have the ability to preview it. Here's the tab I mentioned to you with responses. It gives you a lot of information, a little frowny face because nobody replied back to this yet. It's not even built. And when we were talking about types of questions, so you can get like a radio button choice or checkbox, freeform text, rating, date, there's your linkert. It gives you the ability to upload files now. You used to not have that. Allows you to take choices and rank them. And then there's your net promoter score. And then there's sectioning. So like when we're building out our pre-engagement questionnaires, we create sections. Like we want a section about an organization. We want a section about what does their Azure environment look like. We want a section about what does their Microsoft environment look like. So it's essentially really just like, you know, pretty straightforward. You ask your question, and then you put your options in, right? And Microsoft will kind of preemptively see things here. So it sees this add other as an option. But if I come in here and I type yes, and I come down here and I say no, you can see, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It's really, truly that easy. And you can add an option. My option is maybe. So, you know, you can go as deep as you need to on these questions. You can make them, some of them required, some of them not. It'll allow you to do multiple answers. Multiple answers will change that from a radio to a checkbox. And you have the ability here also to, you know, shuffle, do a subtitle, add branching, as we mentioned. So if you answer yes here, go to section 4, and then you can have the detailing around the thing you said yes to. So it is truly that robust. It's more than just a web form that says enter field, enter field, enter field, enter field, and then submit. It does allow you to get a little bit more robust with it. So I wanted to just give a quick eyes on this. Anything else here from a visualization you want to cover?
Maybe a little bit. It's kind of indirectly, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't touch on the security aspects of a smidge. You know, because security is wrapped in everything we do. You know, when you look at the forms there, I think it was hidden by our logo there. But you think you have a gear or something along those lines. You hit settings and you can control who can respond to your form. If anyone, and with anyone, I believe it's people outside the organization as well. You can only choose only people in the org can respond, or if there's a specific set of people inside the org you want to go towards, you can do that as well. And you can even do the options for different responses and how you want to customize it, as far as that goes. And also, you know, that's something that's not filled out here is that, you know, for different security purposes, you can turn forms on and off for different people inside your org via a licensing portal. You can control external sharing or whether external users are allowed to collaborate with your users inside the org on a form or a quiz as far as building it out. A lot of the security controls that are built into the Azure AD platform are there. Conditional access, it honors that as well, to even access the forms portal and stuff like that. So, you know, there's definitely a lot there that, you know, the same security controls that you're familiar with, for other services are honored here.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting is pop quiz, where's the data stored, Dev?
I believe it's in all the U.S. and U.S. data centers. Globally except China, and
except China.
And if your tenant is hosted in Europe, your data in
Europe data centers. Yep.
Yep. Which so actually, before we talked, I didn't know that. I thought it was just homed wherever your tenant was. So that is a good thing to identify. Because maybe that's a show topic that we do later on, you know, is where his data is homed at for different services, because it can get a bit confusing.
It can. And that's to address GDPR and some other governance, because data and data sovereignty. So the data needs to stay with the people in the space and where they're at. So by having your not your user pinned to Europe, but having your subscription pinned to Europe allows that to be there. So that's a little bit different. And again, it's probably another show topic, because, you know, a lot of people think that, oh yeah, I'm going to take my Exchange user and pin them to the geo where they're at. Well, their mail's there. What about the rest of it? Because if you have Teams globally deployed,
yeah.
So
what does it all mean?
Exactly. So what it means is if you have a requirement to use forms and you have some sort of governance or data sovereignty to comply to, make sure you know where your subscription's at before you yeah. tell your people to say, hey, give us a form with all your PII that could potentially cost you a lot of money and a stiff finger wagging from the GDPR police.
Yeah, I believe forms as of I forget what the date is. I think it was like sometime in 2018 is GDPR compliant. So it has met that. So for people out there who are worried about that. So
yeah, and if you have there's forms that are in FedRAMP and there's like the those services are available in all the secure lanes and alleys and guardrails based upon your tenant type. So again, a testament to a lot of engineering and thought going into how they deploy and update. So that's definitely good. So one of the other pop quiz, what happens when a user leaves a company and they have forms? What happens to those forms? Do you remember?
I do. Well, it honors mostly of everything that all the other services do after 30 days after license is removed. the day is not there. But if you want to maintain those forms, especially if it's a form that's used, you know, like you said, a equipment request form or anything like that, that's gonna be used past the person leaving the org, you can use some PowerShell commandlets to reassign that form to a active user, so that way that the form doesn't get deleted and keeps on being able to be used. So
yeah, so that's something that if you are using forms or intend to use forms, you need to update your exit strategy for your employees when you go through the exit and termination procedures. So it's not just disabling their account, it's also making sure somebody has access to their OneDrive and their mail. It's beyond that now. So if there's org-wide use or department-wide use forms, you gotta reassign them, because after 30 days, they'll be gone. Very good. Very good. Any other items around forms you want to touch on? I know we said we're going to do a little bit of a dive and talk about use cases, but I think we've sprinkled that throughout. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. I mean, just touch on the use case. I mean, honestly, you can use it for whatever your mind can dream up. I mean, if you're, like you say, if you're looking for a way to collect data from people for different questions or a survey or whatever the case may be, forms is the tool for you. Obviously, with notwithstanding, it's very low or very high very high standards or whatever. Yeah, I mean, you can use it for whatever, especially for the ed realm. It's very good for the ed realm if you're looking to capture those answers and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it could be used for whatever you can put your mind to.
I think polls are phenomenally executed in Teams, phenomenally executed. I mean, it's brilliant, right? It's seamless, not much challenge, but yeah, maybe we should do an IT pro tech talk around that. So if you're wondering, as we mentioned, if you're allowed to have it, if it comes with your subscription, and maybe you're confused about subscriptions and what the costs are, we'll put a link in the show notes for an IT pro talk that you and I did just recently about Microsoft licensing. We work our way through a little bit of traditional licensing, and then we work our way into CSPs and MSPs and the various forms, just things to keep an eye on as you either onboard into the Microsoft ecosystem or look to change or just have a general understanding of the basics of licensing. Because I know that is fraught with peril when people try to figure it out. So that's part one of that. It'll be continuously going as long as we're allowed to, you know, post our mugs and our voices online. We're going to continuously update you all on what happens in that space. Also wanted to bring up and thank Aspirant, our sponsor. Aspirant is definitely, on the edge with things when it comes to this. You know, we work with Aspirant with the day job, and we'll put a link in the show notes for those who are listening audio only. Those who are watching, it's right underneath my chin and right at the end of your finger. So we do appreciate Aspirant for helping to sponsor this show and make it possible to get our word out. So, you know, www.aspirant.com. If you're listening, if you're watching, you saw it. Please follow the links there. Follow us on LinkedIn. Follow us on Twitter. We are doing more video than audio right now because it's just been easier to do this and hit the button and then schedule this drop. So we are falling slightly behind on the audio versions of these. We wanted to do the reverse of that, but it's just so much easier now with this to do it this way. So it's a little flip-flopped. So, you know, we want you on the treadmill listening to us and hearing the, you know, the great stuff that Aspirant enables us to do here. Speaking of, you know who's going to be on the next conversation with on IT Pro?
I only know this because I was trying to schedule a meeting with you. Mr. McLean.
Yeah, Mike McLean will be on tomorrow. Well, not on tomorrow. We're going to record tomorrow a conversation with Mike McLean, very similar to we did with a conversation with Erica Jefferson and we did with Dean Kemble. So we are kind of looping in a little bit of the Aspirant family into the IT pro world, and just in the hopes of getting our word messaging out and letting everyone know where we're at and how to get us from a technology perspective. Aside from that, we appreciate you as listeners. We appreciate you as viewers. If there's anything we can do for you, please reach out to us, comment, and we'll talk to you on the next go. Thanks. Bye. Today's show is brought to you by Aspirant. You aspire, together we achieve. This production is for information and entertainment purposes only.
Not all technologies and items discussed are compatible with your system or specific configuration. Your mileage may vary. Consult a professional before trying anything discussed on this show. Visit show notes for relevant information and links.